WGN Radio, Governor Cuomo continuing to deny the sexual harassment charges against him, said that he tries to show his appreciation to employees. More WGN Radio news comes your way at 12:30 and again at 1 o'clock from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. The Wintrust Business Lunch is underway. I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Tom Gimbel is the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. The LaSalleNetwork.com is the website. Hey, Tom, welcome back.
Always good to be with you, John Williams. I just had my salad, so that's the lunch part, so now we can talk about business.
What kind of salad did you have today, Tom?
I was lazy. I went down to Corner Bakery and got a chopped salad from there in the building.
I love their salads over there. I was just bragging today, earlier on the show, that the Jewel and Mariano's have these three bags of salad for $9.99. Have you seen those in the grocery stores?
You know what? I always get a bag of salad, but I've never seen the three for $9.99.
Yeah, and it's like there's a chopped salad or a Southwest salad or a broccoli salad. I am loving those things.
I love salad. What kind of dressing you go with?
That concludes salad talk. Let's talk about Lollapalooza now, which has a contract, and it's expiring at the end of, well, this year's festival. It's over. Should the city renew that? How much do we get on that thing?
I don't know what the actual dollar amount is, John. However, it's one of those things that the city should absolutely renew. And it's hard with COVID and everybody's brains are all over the place. But we've got to stay relevant. And that's on a national scope. And our costs to do things at McCormick Place and conventions with union costs are so high that if we get a chance to keep something like Lollapalooza that makes national attention, gets groups like the Foo Fighters here, it's good for business, it's good for the city, and we've got to keep that going. We lost out on that Star Wars museum a few years ago because of bureaucracy that would have drawn millions of tourists. We've got to keep these things coming to Chicago.
Yeah, I'm with you at least on the last part of that. That is, I think that whatever the cost, even if we made no money, it might be good to prove to people that Chicago's open for business and safe to do business in. And so I saw a statistic that said in 2019, the last year they had Lollapalooza, before this year, of course, the city made $5 million. That sounds low to me. I don't know if that's taxes or what that means, but if you only make $5, I think it's worth renewing the contract just because it reminds people that it's safe to get on a train and come downtown.
You're absolutely right. I actually believe the city should have full transparency and they should show us, because if they're not making money off of this, they're doing something wrong. however, from a standpoint of what it does to validate this city, and now it's not just Chicago, New York, L.A., San Francisco, Boston. Now we're competing against Nashville and Austin and Charlotte and Raleigh. And that's a huge thing that we never had to do before to compete. And now we've got to make sure people know the validity of this city, that we are still the best city in North America, and that's not always known.
And it's a great city for outdoor events, too. It's a great festival town. Grant Park, Millennium Park, the riverfront, the lakefront. I mean, we really do have some unique features in this city.
You ask any business person in Chicago why they have their business here, and they'll say either they're from here, they went to college here, or they'll say Chicago for 8 months of the year is the best city in America.
Yeah.
And for those 8 months, we have to show it off.
You know, I was listening back, though, at WGNRadio.com. Our David Marzullo posted the conversation we had live on the air, our coverage of Chicago not getting the Olympics that went to Rio. I do think we should be glad that we did not get the Olympics.
I think that the Olympics were, I don't think we're the right city for the Olympics, in addition to the amount of cost and infrastructure it would have done. We're too landlocked, and we are a great city for North America, but it's not New York, L.A., what have you. But for the stuff that's North American-centric, that we can put us on a pedestal, and if we can do it the right way, there wasn't, and we'll see what happens with outbreaks, and COVID isn't extreme, but there weren't any violent acts. There weren't any murders that were talked about. It showed this year that with everything going on, we can still run a safe thing. It was great for hotels. It was great for restaurants. It was great for the bodegas. It was great for everything. And we need to renew that and keep that coming back, because it sends a message also to the businesses that are here.
Yeah.
Stay. We can still do stuff here.
Tom Gimbel with a strong opinion about Lollapalooza. The city should renew the contract. Nice to talk to you, Tom. We'll be in touch.
Stay healthy, John.
Bitcoin was all the rage. We talked about it nonstop, it seemed. Up, up, up it went. We didn't seem to be talking about it a lot lately, but now you're hearing about Bitcoin ATMs. Have you driven by one? Have you seen one in our studio? Sunny Marabon is the CEO of Bitcoin of America, and Jenna Polinsky is the Director of Marketing and the Head of Agent Locations. To both of you, welcome to WGN Radio. How are you?
How you doing? Thanks for having us.
Jenna, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so what are we talking about here, Sunny? ATM machines. I'm familiar with the concept, but they would, I could put cash in and credit my Bitcoin account, or I could get cash out of them if I have a Bitcoin account, right?
You can actually do both. That's correct.
And if I'm doing that, is Bitcoin the currency, or are there other cryptocurrencies that would be accepted by these ATMs?
Bitcoin is the most widely used currency right now, cryptocurrency used. So Bitcoin, Litecoin, you can go to Ethereum, you go to Bitcoin Cash, you can go to Ripple, you can keep going, but 99% of our transactions, maybe 99.5%, are all Bitcoin.
How would people use these? What would be a typical scenario, a transaction with the ATM?
People coming in, a lot of maybe underbanked people. There's 7 billion people worldwide. I think 6 billion of them don't have a bank. That's where we found most of our success in the earlier days.
Yeah, and you are in Chicago. Would you be in other cities as well?
Yes. So, our goal is to be in the top 50 cities of America. I think we're probably about 40 of them.
Yeah, we're in 31 states right now.
31 states right now.
And we're about 1,500.
Did you start in Chicago? Where did you originate?
We did.
No kidding. You're of Chicago.
Yep.
We started from Chicago.
And so why do I need a Bitcoin machine if I already have a traditional ATM machine? What's the application or how is it different?
I think the best part is something new that we're doing is a traditional ATM and a Bitcoin ATM combo. So a lot of these stores usually have an ATM sitting next to a Bitcoin ATM, which is kind of taking up a lot of floor space. So we made it easier for our merchants and for our customers. They got that all in one experience.
So what you're looking for now is people to host these ATM machines,
exactly.
Right? And so are you imagining, though, that the same way I would come into a store and pay with cash or pay with a credit card or a debit card, I would pay for merchandise? I wouldn't be paying with a Bitcoin card, but rather I would get currency out of the Bitcoin machine, right? I'm trying to figure out if I'm making deposits or withdrawals from this machine.
You can do both. So our machines have the capability to do a buy and a sell. So you would go with cash to our machine, and essentially those machines are kind of a cash box.
Yeah.
You insert the cash, and our machine will take you through the KYC process, know your customer, your name, phone number, address. Once the system recognizes you, let's say you want to buy $100 worth of crypto, you enter $100 in, and it'll print you out a little receipt, a QR code, which you can scan in your wallet, or you could just directly have your phone, your QR code on your phone, and you just scan it, and then the crypto gets transferred instantly on the spot to your phone.
Similarly, if I want cash, I can go get it out of there.
If you want cash, you could sell me, let's say, 0.01 Bitcoin on the spot, that'll be, I don't know, was that $300 now or $380? And it'll dispense you that amount while at the same time taking your crypto to our wallet and dispensing you U.S. dollars.
Wonder if people hear that Bitcoin goes down and they think this is a good time to buy, so they pull over and make a deposit the same way you might make an investment. If you were a day trader or just somebody playing in markets, you could invest through these machines. Is that the idea as well?
Exactly. And the best part is that if you're just going to fill up a tank of gas, go stop in your local gas station. There's probably an ATM there. And that's kind of the idea. It's supposed to be convenient for the customer and for the merchant. So they're going about their day-to-day business. And you also have your customers, for example, maybe they're going to have their phone fixed, but they're also going to go buy crypto at the same time.
What's the advantage then? Like, you're looking for stores then, gas stations, 7-Elevens, high foot traffic places. You say,
100%.
Hey, we want you to host these machines. Do they pay for that privilege? Do they get a percent? What's the deal for the store that hosts the machine?
That's a great question. So they have a huge incentive, and their incentive is we pay them a monthly rent for that 2x2 square foot space that we use. We basically only use their electricity, and you know, we would bring in the machine. We pay for it. It's no charge to them at all, and we sign 3 to 5, maybe a 7-year contract, depending on the location, and we place our machines there, and we pay the landlord a monthly fee.
You also have what's called, well, I'm not exactly sure what you call it, but that's one way. So let's imagine a business that wants to host the machine. But if I'm a smaller foot traffic place, that's where you come in. What is your angle on this?
Exactly. So, for example, a place with smaller foot traffic, so this could be a phone repair shop, a currency exchange. Basically, how it works is they can do this all from their smartphone or tablet. So they basically have an ATM right in the palm of their hands, and they're going to earn income from every single transaction that takes place. So we take care of their marketing, their advertising. So maybe they weren't on Yelp, they're not on Bing. We're going to do that all for them. So we're going to have customers coming in because they saw an advertisement from us, and they're going to be coming in to their store. And often it could be a new customer who ends up finding their business.
But this is not, these are businesses we're describing now that won't host the machine. They're not going to take 2 foot
exactly.
by 2 foot. I'm going to come into that, but I could still purchase the product or service via Bitcoin, correct?
Exactly.
They would know my Bitcoin account. That's the app. And they'd be, so what am I going to get, a haircut with a Bitcoin?
Yeah, and that's the best part. We also have a point of sale system integrated into the software. So there's two different functions. You can come in and you can purchase Bitcoin or Litecoin with cash, or you can actually use the point of sale system. So if you're selling phone cases, someone could come in and they can actually pay with Bitcoin.
Phone cases, just as an example. I've seen kiosks at malls and things
exactly.
like that. Those people that might have Square, where you could swipe a credit card, might be able to take your Bitcoin now too.
Exactly. And the best part is for them is they don't have space to put an ATM, but they might want to be part of this. So all they have to do is have their tablet out, have their cell phone out, and they can work as an ATM host similarly as well.
What's the resistance? What's the biggest stumbling block for you all? Maybe that's not even the best way to put it, but what is the thing you need to say to convince people to do this?
Sounds too good to be true. That's one thing we get all the time.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
But we really have helped so many businesses, especially during the pandemic. I mean, all this extra income, maybe it's $500 a month. It helps them stay open. I mean, during
$500 this time, a month is what? The money that they're getting?
Yeah, maybe
Bitcoin?
We're paying them rent. If it's an extra couple $100 a month, that
yeah,
could be a difference.
Like the rent varies, you know, depending on if you have a prime location, it could go $500-$700. You know, if your location is not that prime, it just averaged $300-$400. You know, it just really depends on the location, you know.
This is, I get a feeling someday we're going to look back at this and marvel at this conversation where I'm asking these basic, stupid questions the same way maybe the Today Show did when they said, what's internet? And they just didn't know what the future was. And yet here it is. It's happening right before our very ears. The idea that you would have Bitcoin payment or Bitcoin ATMs sounds foreign, but that's because it's the first day, if you will, for this era. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and that's kind of the idea behind this is getting crypto into daily life, whether it's you're going to your gas station, you're filling up a tank of gas, and you're buying crypto. We want it to be more of like a routine for daily life.
What's the website for people? Is it bitcoinofamerica.org?
Yes.
bitcoinofamerica.org if you've got questions or if you want to do business with these folks. bitcoinofamerica.org started here. Sonny and Jenna, thanks for coming into the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Play the tape years from now. Maybe next year. John Williams here. Joey Cranford is too, the co-owner and CEO of the Chicago Magic Lounge. ChicagoMagicLounge.com is the website. Joey, I've heard good things about this place. I haven't been there, but colleagues of mine have said that they've been at your business and they think it is most entertaining. So let's start with that. Good on you, sir.
Okay, well, thank you so much. We did our best part to make tried to make everything just as magical as it could be.
Yeah. Were you able to do that last year? How long were you all shut down then?
Well, we were shut down for 504 days, but who's counting really? We shut the doors March 16th, after about a year and a half of operation. And then we shut down for 16 months, and yesterday was the first day back open.
What was the crowd like yesterday?
It was amazing. Full of just life and vibrancy, and just you see people happy to get out. You know, and our mission is to provide as much misdirection as we can in the world, and that's what people need right now, just a distraction and a little misdirection, and they got it.
How does the Magic Lounge work? Is it food and beverage and a magic show? Do you have a magician in residence, or do you rotate people through?
Kind of like all of what you said. We are a full kind of the experiential establishment, you know, so we have a magic bar that you can just walk into and watch magic at the bar anytime after 5 without a ticket. The rest of the venue is a ticketed venue, but the show is it's all immersive. So when you come in, you go through this fireplace, this kind of magic secret door that takes you into the big cabaret. There's magicians walking around showing magic at the table. And then we have 2 acts on stage, and our front couple rows are kind of elevated price to get you into a third area of the theater, into the 654 Club. And it's just great. There's about 12 magicians working on any given night. We rotate them in from out of town, from out of country. And we also have about a pool of 25 to 30 local professionals as well.
Sounds very much like the jazz club business model. You know, I go to Winter's downtown, for instance. I've been to several of them, actually, and this sounds similar to that, only the music is magic.
Right. And also think of it like a comedy club, where we have some, you know, host performers that, you know, they work here. A magician can work here five days a week, 6 if they really want to. But the way we come in and out, we have headliners just like you'd see at a comedy club, or like you said, you know, these jazz clubs that just bring in these acts and travel the world.
So what if somebody's like, yeah, I was at my cousin's bar mitzvah and I've seen the magic act. You know, I talk to me about the quality or level of the craft.
From the beginning, I always wanted to change what people think of when they think of the word magician. You know, close your eyes, think of a magician. So not that. No top hat, no rabbit, no sawing anyone half, and not, you know, just some old white guy. Yeah. We're changing the face of magic. We're making it more diverse. We're making it more inclusive, but also changing the way it's performed. You know, Chicago-style magic is not your birthday party magician. Chicago-style magic is for adults, and it's always been for a drinking crowd. So it's magic at the bar. It's magic at your tableside. It's fun. It's fast. It's funny, but not corny. You know, and we also elevate the way we look and dress, and, you know, we're not we're in silly ties. We're wearing nice suits and making magic classy, you know, and that's, you know, that's the way it's historically been done in Chicago. It's kind of an old thing.
Chicago,
we're bringing that back.
Chicago has a history of magic. There's a style of performance of magic relative to Chicago, huh?
Right. Just like, you know, the blues is in Chicago. It's Chicago-style blues. It's electric blues when Muddy Waters plugged in the electric guitar. Improv is very much of a Chicago history style of performance from the Compass Players, then going into Second City. And with us, it's kind of a lesser-known story, but I was able to uncover all this wonderful history. It all goes back to a man named Matt Shulian, who opened a little bar called Shulian's. His father opened it in 1915, and he started doing magic at the table. Prohibition closed everybody down for a while, and then after Prohibition, they'd been doing some work in the basement during that time. And so when Prohibition was over, he came back up, and the magic was great. And it was, everybody would come from all around to see Matt Shulian do his card tricks. And this was a time when vaudeville was huge. You know, Thurston and Keller and Houdini were traveling the world doing these big stage acts. But in Chicago, we kept it personal and at your table side. So really focusing on the close-up and the interpersonal relationships there. And then it would just catch on. You know, there's about 15 magic bars through history in Chicago and the Chicago suburbs. And there was about a period of time where 9 magic bars were open all at once. There was a place called the New York Lounge on the north side. There was a place called Little Bit of Magic on the south side. There was a place called Shulian's, of course. That was, they had moved up to where O'Donovan is today. There were all of these wonderful places, you know, that we're just hosting magic all over the city.
How many are there now? Are you restarting this trend? Are there, is there competition?
Well, I'd like to say, oh, nine, we're flourishing, though. We're the only true magic bar in the city doing what we do. There are other magicians, of course, doing wonderful shows all over the city. You know, but we like to think of ourselves as an immersive venue for magic, you know, and we are the only thing of our kind in the entire Midwest region of the United States.
One last question, Joey. And by the way, Joey Cranford's on the phone line, co-owner, CEO of Chicago Magic Lounge, just north of Wilson off of Clark. What's the exact address for it, Joey?
5050 North Clark Street.
5050 North Clark. Well, that's easy to remember. Is there a is there a signature stunt, trick, act, thing? I mean, you said it's immersive, it's personal, it's, you know, drinks and food and magic that's right up front. Is there something that you're known for besides all that?
Definitely for just the style of magic that we're producing. Magic behind the bar and magic at your table. It is one of the coolest parts of the experience. You know, a lot of people say, what time does the show start? It's like the show really starts when you walk in the door. And that's the other thing that we're known for, is not being able to find us. So we are hidden behind a laundromat. We wanted to get you just off your feet from the moment you walk in. There's a little neon sign that says misdirection right over the door. And when you walk in there, you are completely misdirected into a laundromat. If you find the way to get in, then you're in. And then we have another secret door that opens once you're into the cabaret theater. So, you know, we're kind of known for our little surprises around every corner.
Yeah, if you're lost, you're there. Joey Cranford is there. You can use that if you need it. Joey Cranford.
I feel like if you're lost, you're there.
The CEO of Chicago Magic Lounge, 5050 North Clark, chicagomagiclounge.com. They're back in business. Nice to talk to you, Joey.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you.
It's 12:45. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Amazon Prime members in Chicago will no longer be able to get free delivery from Whole Foods. Amazon informed customers that starting August 30th, it will charge a $9.95 fee for deliveries in Chicago and four other cities, including Boston, Manchester, New Hampshire, Portland, Maine, and Providence, Rhode Island. Amazon bought Whole Foods in 2017 and offered free delivery to Prime members for orders over $35. Starting this week, Chicago residents are eligible for at-home setup services for their Apple devices. Apple has partnered with a company called Enjoy to deliver products directly to the doors of customers. The service includes help transferring your contacts or syncing your iCloud. You can choose to meet with a tech indoors, outdoors, or through FaceTime. If you pick at-home service, Enjoy says the workers will wear masks and undergo a pre-appointment health evaluation. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
We've got the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. Let's begin with a headache, the big one that Bayer inherited when it bought Monsanto. Is it Bayer or Bayer?
Depends on whether you're English or German. I always call it Bayer.
Well, whichever you prefer, the company that bought Monsanto inherited a huge headache that no amount of aspirin is going to cure. The weed killer Roundup and the lawsuits claiming its active ingredient, glyphosate, causes cancer. So Bayer has decided to remove glyphosate from the U.S. lawn and garden market. Our gardening guru Jim Fazell maintains the problem is not the chemical.
It's a wonderful material. It's been around forever. I started doing research on it in 1972. The biggest problem is misuse by home gardeners in particular. It's probably the most misused garden product of all time. Nobody bothers to read labels anymore. It just seems like you put the stuff on and then hope for the best.
Before Monsanto started selling Roundup to the lawn and garden crowd, it was a farm chemical. And Bayer says farmers will continue to be able to buy glyphosate for weed control.
You know, farmers that do this, but also commercial applicators and landscape contractors, these people are all licensed to use these materials. And they attend clinics and seminars to train them for the licensing. And they have to take an exam in order to be able to buy these materials. And they do read the labels.
Bayer says Roundup weed killer will remain on the lawn and garden market with other chemicals replacing glyphosate. But the problem that Bayer inherited is not going away anytime soon. It says there are over 30,000 unresolved cancer claims, 90% of which are from the lawn and garden users. It's a selling day today at the Chicago Board of Trade. Right now, corn is trading down about 9 cents. Beans are down 36 cents per bushel. That's about 2.6%. And wheat is trading down about a nickel at the Merck. Hogs and cattle are trading higher. Today is National Watermelon Day. And did you know that watermelons are 92% water? Oh, also, one of the best inventions of our time is the seedless watermelon.
Thank you.
Don't you think?
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I've heard you say that, John.
It's on my top three.
Yep. Although if you swallow a seed, it will not, contrary to what your weird uncle told you, grow in your belly. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch with airline news of a disturbing sort. Start with that one, Amy.
Yeah, so American and Spirit canceled hundreds of more flights. They have been really struggling to recover from disruptions that they saw on Sunday. There were some storms that went through the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Last weekend, though, before that, weekend before last, there were some storms in a couple of other hubs in the southeast. So this is kind of delay upon delay, but close to 2,000 flights were delayed total, about 850 from American, like tons of them. Now, this is compounded by the fact that there's also still staffing shortage issues. So airlines that are, you know, usually ahead of weather will see some cancellations. That's normal. That's par for the course. We're used to that. But also getting them rescheduled has been part of the issue because of some staffing issues. So we saw a lot of people going to social media saying that they couldn't get a hold of anyone to rebook their ticket. They were having trouble. There was long lines at airports to rebook, things like that. So they've restored capacity for the most part, but there's still some delays as they're just kind of getting everybody to the destinations they were trying to get to.
I want to stay on the airline topic here, but just a quick diversion from all of that. Are you seeing anything about staffing for stores when Christmas shopping starts, brick and mortar places? I wonder how that's going to go.
You know, I haven't seen that part so much. I saw a little bit about staffing about a month ago or so pertaining to airports. But what I have seen is some economists talking about bracing for the winter holiday shopping time, that if we can't get everything resolved, which perhaps we will not, given that we've seen some major weather events happening in Germany, some flooding, and we've seen some issues with China and some shipping issues there. Still, we're seeing the effects of the Suez Canal delay, the boat that was stuck there for quite a while. So all of those things add up to a bit of caution being cast on the holiday shopping season of like, hey, if you're going to order something, this is not the year to do the last minute shopping and hope it gets delivered in time. You should really kind of order way, way in advance.
Yeah, and I'm just looking down Michigan Avenue or thinking about stores I might go to. Say you go to Nordstrom or say you go to a mom and pop shop in town that has 5 employees. If they're having trouble getting employees to work at big box stores or local department stores or mom and pop shops, now, imagine when the foot traffic has increased, the frustrations people are having in stores and restaurants now is going to be exponential unless this changes soon.
Yeah, certainly. You know, retailers tend to hire a ton of staff just for that holiday shopping season. So if that's an issue now, as you said, it might be quite a serious one by the time we get around to doing our holiday shopping.
Back to the airline business. Other Boeing news, they are postponing the test of space flight, is that right?
That's right. So they were earlier this morning going to launch their CST-100 Starliner capsule. They were going to send that to the International Space Station. They punted. They decided they're not going to do that. Unclear yet if they're going to try to do it tomorrow. This was going to be Friday, but as you may recall, there was an issue with the International Space Station. It was doing cartwheels at that time, which is never a sentence I thought I was going to say. There was a Russian vessel that docked into it. And at that time, it began firing its thrusters. The Russian officials said that was a computer glitch of why that started happening. But nonetheless, it started making the space station do some flips up there. So it had been delayed for that reason. So this is an unmanned spacecraft. There's no one in it, but it's a major step for Boeing. They need to get through this in order to begin looking towards travel and crewed space flights. So well, I'm keeping a lookout to see if they're going to schedule that for tomorrow or when that's going to when they're going to reschedule that. But it's, you know, another hit for Boeing. Here's a moment when, you know, they've had a lot of, I'd say, erosion of trust of their manufacturing processes. And, you know, we saw crisis after crisis with them around, you know, the 737 MAX and then the Dreamliner. We saw whistleblowing issues and major turnover in their C-suite. So we saw all these issues. And then so for at that point, even a glitch, I think, kind of is just not what Boeing wants to see happen.
We're out of time. We'll talk more this week. Thanks for your time this morning, Amy.
Thanks so much.